It's the Ray Dasha Show on RTE Radio 1. Have a great summer.
Oh yeah, we're squeezing the final few drops out of the summer. I know! Most of the children are back. I think some schools aren't returning till tomorrow. Most of the schools are back and did feel autumnal today coming in. Had the jacket on. Remember when you were a kid and autumn, you had to spell autumn. And you were going, where did that N come from? And then when they introduced you to the adjective, autumnal, there's the N. Why can't we pronounce it in the ordinary word? Autumn, autumn. Anyway, we'll be playing Diarmaid today and tomorrow. And then 1st of September, we'll have to get a new one from Diarmaid. If you're listening, Diarmaid's mum, because we can't be saying have a good summer. How are you? Did you have a good weekend? Yeah, lovely weather over the weekend. Just before we continue with the business of today, let's continue with the ovine theme. Because Danny Tip, is that his name? Danny Tip has the freedom of London. He can march his sheep across some bridge or something or other. Well, there was an ovine rescue on Lambay Island over the weekend. I don't know if you saw this. Lucky Louie is the lamb. That's what they're calling him, Lucky Louie. He got stuck on a cliff and then on a cave out in Lambay Island, and the Coast Guard came and rescued him. Yay! Well done, the Coast Guard. Lambay Island, it's called Lambay Island because of lambs. I did a bit of research because, you know, if you want to be talking about something, you want to know what you're talking about. It's derived from Old Norse and Old English of Germanic origin and related to the Dutch word lamb and the German word lam. The name probably originated from the practice of sending yos to Lambay Island in spring so they could lamb in a predator-free environment. And there's a farm out there now. I've just looked that up as well. And they have a flock of sheep. They used to have Mayo mule breed. The current flock is a cross of Texan and Blackface Mountain sheep. So Lucky Louie was probably one of them. So now you know a little bit more when you're talking about the rescue of little Lucky Louie the lamb on Lambay Island. So there. We're having a good Paralympics, aren't we? Jason Smith over the weekend. That was close. That was very close. It was a nose. I thought your man was going to catch him. But Jason gets his 6th gold medal. We've spoken to him on the show over the years. He's a lovely man. Hard working, determined and a sporting hero. 6 Paralympian gold medals. And Nicole Turner from Port Arlington. That's as close to Kildare as makes no difference. I know it's in a different county, but it's only down the road. If you go through Monasterevin and out the road, you're in Port Arlington. It's on the Leash-Kildare border. So we'll take her as our own. Well done, Nicole. She said after winning the S6 50-metre butterfly swim that this was the best day of her life. She thought she might be in the medal. She'd have to work hard, but she never dreamt she'd win silver. Isn't that amazing? So congratulations. Just on the autumnal thing, I ran by my first conker over the weekend. Have you seen conkers around? Yeah, they're very green at the moment and small, but they're there. There's another sign. And I saw Ryan Tuberty doing star jumps out in the grass. They were getting ready for the Late Late Show. There's another sign. And of course, we've had the All-Ireland hurling and the football now. We know who's in that. It's Tyrone v Mayo. I was talking to a person from Kerry over the weekend and she had asked one of her friends, "Are you coming up for the match?" Because she was up for tickets. And they said, "Ah, no. Should we leave it for the final?" That's what they said. That's what they were pretty sure they were going to make it to the final. And then they were thinking with Dublin out of the way, maybe they could be All-Ireland champions. But Tyrone had something to say about that. Went to extra time. Great match. Great match. Are we getting into this again? Sorry. Does autumn not start until September equinox 21st? You see, there's 3 different types of seasonal things. One is that the equinox thing, the spring equinox and the autumnal equinox and the winter, all that sort of thing. Then there's the official one that you learn in school, and then there's my one. So there's 3 different ways of looking at it. And then you probably have your own thing as well. I love these. The lads from Double Z, as in Zig and Zag, spotted a few very clever taglines on people's businesses that incorporate their names and use a bit of a pun. For example, I've seen this. There's a transport company called Toomey's. Well, it's owned by the Toomey family. I don't know if it still is, but Toomey is the name of the company. And on their trucks, they have "To me, to you." I like that. Then there's a guy who sells seeds. His name is Mick Cave. And it's Mick Cave and the Good Seeds as opposed to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. You know, Into My Arms. That's one of the most beautiful songs ever recorded. You know that one? Yeah, I Don't Believe in an Interventionist God. Wouldn't touch a hair on your head. Da, 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 da. Dirty Dogs Done Dirt Cheap. That's Pet Groomers. But the one that wins the Double Z Award for Best Pun in a Business is Major Tom's Ground Control. They're landscapers. They're landscapers. We looked up their website. They're based out in Bray. And I have a number here as well for Major Tom's Ground Control. It's on the back of their truck, 085-725-88. I'm sure they'll be glad of the business. Landscaping, hedge trimming. I'm just reading on the back of the truck here. Grass cutting, tree surgery, fencing, power washing, bedding and waste removal. All done by Major Tom's Ground Control. This is Major Tom's Ground Control. Do you know that song, actually? You just reminded me, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Into My Arms. I don't know if you're watching this. Is it on Star Plus, which is the adult version of Disney Plus? So if you have Disney Plus, you have Star Plus. And there's a programme on at the moment called War of the Worlds. I was telling you about it last week. Gabriel Byrne, Daisy Edgar-Jones, Aaron Heffernan was in it. But the part of the whole thing is that they're communicating with aliens. Now, they think they're aliens at the start. I'm not giving away too much. But part of the way they communicate with them is to just send off a song. And the song that they decided from the observatory somewhere in the French Alps to send off was that song. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Into My Arms. I'll have to get it out. I haven't got it lined up, but I will play it before the end of the week. Lambay, they also have a flock of wallabies on Lambay Island. I learned this in college. Dublin Zoo had an overflow, so instead of culling them, they were sent there and bred successfully. I remember back in the day, we got an email in from somebody who swore they saw a kangaroo outside the National Concert Hall. They gave details of it, and we went to see if we could find it. And it brought us back to Lambay Island. And somebody suggested that maybe one of the wallabies got loose from Lambay Island and made its way to the National Concert Hall, maybe to see a performance by the RTE Concert Orchestra or something like that, because they're big fans of classical music. And that's what happened there. We never got to the bottom of it. Lambay Island has some very unusual points of interest. The architect of Lambay Castle, Mr. Lutyens, designed New Delhi, the whole of the city. The island also has a colony of wallabies imported from Australia. You see, somebody says they come from the zoo. Somebody else says they come from Australia. I feel an OB coming on from Lambay Island. Good afternoon. Today we're broadcasting from Lambay Island. Why? I don't know, but we're here. Lionel Richie's flooring. Ah, yes. David mentioned that one. And we're listening. Dermot is back to school tomorrow in Carlstown National School. We'll think of a new tagline. That's the Major Tom's Ground Control, is it? Yeah, is it? Sorry? Oh, Dermot, sorry. Yeah, Dermot, sorry, Dermot. Yeah, the voice, yes. So it's the, you're listening to radio. Let's go back and see. I can't remember what it says. Let's play it again for you. Let's see what he's doing.
It's the Ray Dash Show on RTE Radio 1. Have a great summer.
I tell you what, Dermot, we're going to get you some help from our brilliant listeners. So Dermot's taglines have been, wash your hands, borrowed from Uncle Joe. Have a brilliant summer. They came up with it themselves. But now as we move in to the autumn and we feel all autumnal, what should Dermot say at the end of his little jingle? Any suggestions? 51551RadRT.ie. I'll just give you a listen to that again just to give you the rhythm of it. The rhythm.
It's the Ray Dash Show on RTE Radio 1. Have a great summer.
You see, just a little tagline at the end to put a pep in people's step. A smile on their faces. Was in Bristol at the weekend. A van selling kebabs was Jason Donovan. Jason Donovan sold kebabs and chips, Aidan and Galway. And I bet Major Tom's Ground Control is strumming in the most peculiar way. You see that? That's if you knew the lyrics to the song, you know, and you do. There's a courier company in Northern Ireland called To Finahi and Beyond. Ha ha! To Finahi and Beyond. And meat to please you on the back of a van. Veal meat again. Veal, you see, V-E-A-L, veal meat again. Seen in Limerick City. And that Finahi and Beyond reminds me of Up, reminds me of Lou Grant. And Asner, Mr. Asner, his first name. I should know his first name. Anyway, he died over the weekend in his 90s. And Lou Grant was a huge favourite in our house from 1977 to 1982. It was an offshoot of Mary Tyler Moore, remember back in the day. And Lou was the editor in a very busy newsroom. So he'd be sadly missed, but that's a good age, well into his 90s. 5 and 5 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. I spotted this over the weekend. You might like it. It's Dua Lipa and Elton John and a little mashup of a couple of Elton John hits. See if you can spot them. Good afternoon. Elton John, Dua Lipa, Sacrifice in there, Rocket Man in there, and that's nice, isn't it? Nice for the afternoon. You're tuned to RT Radio 1, 5 on 5 5 1 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. My business is called The Spokesman. I'm a mobile bicycle repair person, says Carl. And best ever business slogan, an Irish plumbing contractor in New York about 30 years ago was struggling. So he changed the business name to Danny Boy Plumbing with the slogan, the pipes are calling. Hasn't looked back since. Is that a true story, Colin Doyle? Did you make that up? And will you cheer on our Kildare man, Patrick Monaghan from Cara? He goes in the wheelchair marathon on Sunday next. He's a multi-winner of the Dublin Marathon. Patrick's dad, Mick, refereed the All-Ireland final between Kerry and Tyrone back in 2005. See, that's from Pat Costello, sports editor, Kildare Nationalist. So Pat knows what he's talking about. And the tagline for Dermot, how about keep her lit? Bit 1990s, is it, Patrick? For Dermot, bring on 2022, the year of things to do. That's Claire. And a buddy of mine has a kitchen respraying company and he called it 50 Shades of Spray. The mind went blank there. Sorry, Ed Asner, 91, and he played Lou Grant. And I was just looking at his IMDb there while you were listening to Elton John, Dua Lipa, and he still has some work in the pipeline, as in it hasn't been released yet. His name is on a movie that won't be released till 2023 called Unplugged, where he plays a psychiatrist. So he was working right up until the end. May he rest in peace. Now, I forgot to tell you about our quiz of today. Today being the 30th of August 2021, we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, decades, centuries. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. And we have a prize. Yes, we do. Today's prize comes from the Fairways Hotel Dundalk, 4-star destination in the heart of Dundalk. It's a 2-night stay with breakfast each morning, dinner on one evening in the Bistro restaurant. And during your stay, you can enjoy a calming cruise across the Loch of Legends with Carlingford Loch Ferries, or visit Ravensdale Equestrian Centre, located close to the award-winning Ravensdale Forest, or take a stroll around the historic fishing village of Black Rock. And all back then to the Fairways Hotel. So, two people. If you want to be involved, all you have to do is answer a qualifying question, which is this. Can you name the current Minister for Education? Can you name the current Minister for Education? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
In relation to the wording on vans, trucks, etc., I remember a mobile crane company, their slogan written on the back was "Never accept a lift from a stranger." That's Paul in Coolock. Thanks for that, Paul. And Neil in Bray says, cheese company in South Africa for the love of cheeses. Get that, yeah. Now, we came across an interesting TikTok account the other day. Carrie Barney was due to fly home to America from Dublin last Monday with her new husband of only days. And at the airport, Carrie tested positive for COVID. So she's now in hotel quarantine in Dublin and she's been posting her life on TikTok from inside her hotel room. She's on the line now. Good afternoon, Carrie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for taking the call. So, Yanks is your new husband?
Yes, he is.
How do you spell Yanks?
Y-A-N-K-S.
All right.
Like you're yanking someone's hair.
All right, okay, right. I've never met a Yanks before. I've met numerous Yanks.
Nor did I before I met him.
Right, okay. So, when did you get married?
I got married on the 15th of August.
Okay. And then you were honeymooning around Europe. Where did you go?
I went to Rome on the 16th and I was there till Saturday. And then on the 21st, I came to Dublin.
Okay. But you were in Florence and on the Amalfi Coast and Pompeii.
Yeah, we went all around Rome. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. Had you been there before?
No, I've never been across the pond. So this was my first experience. Okay.
And all very romantic. Florence, very romantic. Like the Golden Bridge, the Ponte Vecchio, that's beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you get to see a sunset anywhere?
Yeah, we saw it. We saw a beautiful sunset on the Amalfi Coast. Uh-huh. It was breathtakingly gorgeous.
Yes. Holding hands, looking into each other's eyes. Beautiful. Beautiful. And of course, honeymoons are the things you talk about, you know, forever. And you look back on, you have the pictures and all that sort of thing. So you arrive in Dublin and everything's going swimmingly until.
Yeah.
Yes. So
until I'm about to leave.
Okay. But you had a good time in Dublin. You landed at a good weekend.
I loved it here. It was amazing.
And it was All-Ireland hurling final weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of that?
Yeah, so I saw a sea of people in red and green, very passionate about their favorite teams.
Yeah, yeah.
So I saw that all around town. We went shopping. We went to the Guinness Museum. It was phenomenal. And yeah, we had an amazing time.
And you went to Penny's?
Yes. I shot my heart out at Penny's. It was good. We had to buy a second bag to get home.
Well, there are two of our greatest exports there, Guinness and Penny's. So you got them both.
Yes.
Okay. So you have a brilliant time. Coming to the end of your honeymoon, you have to be back in the United States, yourself and Yanks, for work. So mm-hmm. what happened to the airport?
So per U.S. custom or, you know, law, you have to, regardless of your vaccination status, you have to get tested for you to go back to the United States. So there's testing facilities that are near the airport. So we just got an appointment very early. It'll take less than an hour. So we got there early, you know, got our tests, and we were just waiting in line to check in, and we were all set to go. And his comes up, you know, bright green, yeah. Not detected. Everything's fine. Mine is bright red, COVID positive, and it felt like the world stopped.
But that was for me, at least. That was an antigen test, was it, Carrie?
Yes. Okay. So I took an antigen test and I couldn't believe it. So I ran back and I paid for a PCR test because I was like, I'm a nurse in the United States. And I was like, I've seen false positives. It can happen.
Yes.
And then
yes.
They tested me again and it was so positive.
It was a positive, so. Positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No false positives there. So yeah, what was the chat between yourself and Yanks at that stage?
I mean, I feared for a lot of things. I mean, I didn't know how this country handled the pandemic. I didn't know the politics or what I was going to do. Financially, I was like, I don't know what goes on. And I'm freaking out in the middle of this, you know, airport. Yeah. And I've always been really open about my mental health. I suffer from anxiety. And I was trying not to have a panic attack at 9 a.m. in the middle of an airport. I don't want to freak out other people. So they ended up putting us at the hotel by the airport and separating us. And now I'm in a government sanctioned quarantine hotel. Okay. And he had to fly back to the United States.
Was he given the option to stay?
He was, yeah. But the option was if he stays, he was going to be segregated from me as well. So they were like, they tested him again, a PCR test, and he was negative. And they were like, we highly suggest that you leave. But if you refuse to leave your wife, you'll be at the same hotel, but on the other side of the hotel. You won't see her. Like, it's, you're both be underneath this thing. But the trick is, if he ever tests positive during this time, then we have to start our 10 or 14, day stay all over.
Yes, yes.
I was like, just get out, go home.
Yes. Well, the frustration of having your new husband under the same roof and not being able to see him. Like, that's mm-hmm. So he's better off being at the other side of the pond, as you call it, than down the corridor and take a lift. To the second floor.
Okay.
But you've taken to this experience with relish. I don't know if you got relish in the lunch. I don't know if that's part of the lunch. But yeah. but you have, and you've got loads of people watching your TikTok videos. Was this just to pass the time, Carrie?
Yeah, I remember, you know, back when the whole COVID thing started, I watched a few other people during their government sanctioned quarantines watching what they got to eat. And I thought it was fascinating. So I was like, I think this is going to be my way for me to stay sane. Right. And I thought I would be lucky if 100 people watched me. Now it's over close to almost 50,000 people that are now following me. It's crazy.
It is a bit when you think about it, isn't it? Because you're in a nondescript hotel room and you're talking people through your lunch. You do introduce it. Let's talk about lunch, baby. Let's talk about...
And
the big thing is pennies, Guinness, and of course, what's the final one in the threesome?
I'm sure it's that Tato sandwich.
It is Tato crisps. Yes, Tato crisps.
Oh my gosh, you guys did me dirty. That tasted so bad.
What? Like the crisps taste good because you like them, but then somebody suggested that you have a crisp sandwich.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I'll try it. I'm all about trying new foods. I'm a very picky eater.
Right.
So I was, I've been trying to find the silver lining of this whole scenario. So I was like, let me try the sandwich that everybody in my comments keeps talking to me about. And I've never been so close to vomiting in my life.
So you got the white bread, lashings of butter on both sides, and then the crisps. Mm-hmm. And you mashed it good together, and then the look on your face, it was, you didn't like it. It was obvious from...
No, I tried. Yeah. I tried to be like, so good, but I couldn't even fake it.
Did I read here that, okay, you didn't like crisp sandwiches, that's fair enough, I'm not a big fan of them myself, but you did try chocolate muffins and gravy. Is that correct?
Everything, yeah. Well, not together. I didn't put gravy on my chocolate muffin. No,
that's what I thought. I misread it there. Yeah, because that would be disgusting.
No, at this hotel, I come to find out that not only are a lot of people all over the world watching, but the chef of this hotel is watching.
Right.
The healthcare providers at the hotel are watching.
Okay.
So I had a TikTok that I put, live, and I basically was talking about my mental health, and I was having a rough day missing my partner. And in 15 minutes, the nurse was at my door knocking with some cookies, some crisps, and it was so incredibly sweet.
Isn't that lovely? The power of TikTok.
Yeah, like the hospitality of the Irish is crazy.
Now, you could have just picked up the phone and said, but anyway, you decided to go through TikTok.
I'm having a hard day.
Yes, fair enough. How are you now? Yeah, because it's Wednesday when you're flying out, which is great. So what, tonight and Tuesday night, two more sleeps.
Exactly. That's what I keep thinking. Two more sleeps, a few more meals, and I'm good to go.
Yeah. And is there anything you want to do before you leave us? Any other culinary delights that you haven't sampled? I'm just trying to think.
I had a spice bag, but that was the last meal I had before I went on quarantine lockdown, and it was delicious.
Yeah,
spice, but unfortunately, I don't think those are offered at 6 a.m. here.
No. And you were a bit disappointed that you couldn't get takeaway, which is obviously the rules around.
Yeah, quarantine. That's my biggest bummer.
Yeah. It's a pity you can't sample fish and chips. Have you had fish and chips, Irish fish and chips, Dublin fish and chips?
Yeah, I did when I was in town.
Yeah, you had that. Okay. Well, if we get any suggestions, we will pass them on to you.
Absolutely.
When are you doing your last TikTok video from quarantine?
I'll probably document my entire journey home at this point.
Right.
So come follow me. Carry me home tonight. Have a great one.
Yeah. And just on the serious side of it, because you were vaccinated twice, they're telling us now that if you do manage to get COVID, as you did, although you're double vaccinated, that it's not as bad. So that was the case for you, was it?
Yeah, I just had a minor cough. I really thought it was allergies, because Rome and here are very different in temperature. So sometimes that freaks me out when I've traveled in the past. So I thought it was just allergies. Didn't know it was COVID. Right. But I think that's all because I have been fully vaccinated. So
right. Congratulations again on the marriage
and all
that sort of thing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And good luck with your reuniting with your new husband, Yanks, in the coming days. Thanks for talking to us, Carrie.
Anytime. Have a great one, y'all.
Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, my next guest is Soraya Afzali. And Soraya arrived in Ireland from Afghanistan a little over 2 months ago. When she left there, life was normal for her friends and family. But within a short space of time, as you know, if you're reading the papers and listening to the news, everything has changed. And the Taliban are now in control of Afghanistan. Soraya, good afternoon. Thanks so much for coming. Before you left Afghanistan, had you any idea what was going to happen in the coming months?
I didn't expect what is happening now. When I was in Afghanistan over 4 months ago, actually 2.5 months ago, for a period of time, for 5 months or a bit more, Things were slightly more peaceful. We were still going to schools. We were, you know, traveling by bus, by plane. And as a woman, I was having a good life, you know. I was continuing my life based on what I have worked for the last 20 years.
Yes. So 20 years ago, the Taliban were kicked out of power. And yes. For the last 20 years, Afghanistan has been trying to rebuild itself, I suppose.
Yes.
It's difficult, but been trying that. And now it seems like you're back to zero.
Absolutely.
So what memories do you have of, you were only 8 in 2000, is that correct? What age were you? You were around 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, around 8, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you, I suppose you've been told by your mother and other people about what it was like under the Taliban regime. And mm-hmm. What stories did they tell you?
When my family and I came back to Afghanistan at the end of 2001, the roads were not paved. There was a very low infrastructure, no system of schools or proper school system. I remember I was studying under tents, but you know, we were studying, we were striving for a better education system, better schools and doctors and health services. During the past 20 years, we have developed a lot. I remember getting out on the streets of Kabul, chanting for women's rights, for women's voices, and we were chanting against the street harassments and things like that. We have come a long way, and today, unfortunately, we're losing everything. And among everything that we have lost for the last week, we are losing the voice of Afghan women, which is one of the most important thing that only comes with time.
Okay. So would you explain to our listeners then, because this is something you've lived with and you've studied, what do you think is going to happen under the Taliban to Afghan women?
I cannot guess what is going to happen, but I know whatever, like, the direction it's going towards, it is not good. For the moment, the education is banned. Women are being told to not return to their jobs. Girls are allowed in school until sixth grade. You know, above that, no girls is allowed to go to school.
What age is that? About 12, is it? Sixth grade?
Yeah, 7 years old is the first grade.
Okay, so yeah. So 19 then, is it? Sixth grade, sorry, 13.
13, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they can't, at the moment, they can't go to school after they hit 13.
They hit
13, right, okay. And what about, you know, women who would have become solicitors, doctors, you know, CEOs of companies if that happened? What about them?
They're locked in their houses. They're scared. They have some of my friends, for instance, they have been trying to get out of their homes, but they have faced beating. They have faced harassment. And some of the Taliban members have told them that, why are you walking without a mahram or a male chaperone, which is something that is practiced under Sharia.
Will you explain that to our listeners then? A mahram, spelled M-A-H-R-A-M, is it?
Yes. A mahram is a concept that is developed under Sharia. And Sharia is a form of belief under Islam that is very extreme, and it's only decided by a group of men that is called ulema. And back in before 2001, Taliban were practicing this Sharia in Afghanistan by, you know, burning books, by destroying TVs, by making women to wear burqa and oppressing all sorts of human voices. And this is what they were practicing. They claim that they will be different this time, but I don't believe it for a second time. And for what is happening on the ground in Afghanistan, it doesn't look like that it is any different.
Could they say they're going to be an administration of inclusion? Do you believe that?
But how this inclusion is guaranteed? for the moment, you know, all of the human rights activists, all the journalists are being searched down, are being hunted down. Their houses are being searched by the Taliban. And most of the journalists have fled Afghanistan. Like a whole generation that is literate have fled Afghanistan. And this gives them a chance to portray to the world whatever they want to portray. For instance, on the first day that the Taliban took over Kabul, a journalist from Al Jazeera went on and they took an interview and she put a simple scarf. And the same thing happened with one of the journalists on the Afghan national TV. And this was a propaganda by the Taliban trying to say that this time we are different. But that woman was threatened and she has fled Afghanistan right now.
Okay.
So
just go back to the Mahram then. So under Sharia, and you don't say Sharia law because it sort of legitimizes it when you say law. So you just say Sharia.
Yes.
So a Mahram is a member, a male member of your family. Is that it? Or
yes. It could be your brother. It could be your husband. But like it's basically a concept that a man owns a woman. And without a man, a woman is basically like nothing.
Okay. And then are they insisting from, because you're in contact with people at home, are they insisting that women wear the burqa?
There has been no official statement on Taliban's part on the veil and burqa yet. However, they have put out a statement saying that all the women should cover themselves based on Sharia and Islamic.
Okay. And what are those rules under Sharia then about?
Well, this is the scary part, you know, like in before 2001, they enforced burqa on women and they made themselves to cover basically everything. And this time around, we don't know what it's going to look like. For the moment, women are just simply scared to get out on the streets.
Okay. Right. And pre-2001, what were the punishments around people who didn't obey their rules?
Beating, harassment, stoning, like a range of horrifying punishments.
Right. Whereabouts in Afghanistan are you from?
I'm from Mazar-e-Sharif, which is in the north of Afghanistan.
Right. And there are loads of different, are they called groupings, tribes, religions? How do you describe them?
Afghanistan is made of different ethnicities, all coming together. You know, the north can be different than the west, but even despite of that, you know, in Mazar, for instance, there are Hazaras, there are Pashtuns, there are Uzbeks.
You're Hazara?
Yes.
Right. But all Muslim?
Yes, they're all Muslim.
Okay. So would you explain to our listeners a brief history of Afghanistan and how you see how it got to here?
Sure. Well, I'm not going to go too far back.
Okay.
However, in the 1970s and 80s, the Soviets tried to take over Afghanistan, fighting the British. And after that, once the Soviet regime fell down, it was the United States who came over to fight the Soviets, using the space of Afghanistan as a proxy space to continue their war. And there were a group of mujahideen in Afghanistan that were funded by the United States, and even before that, by the British, that kind of nourished them. They, you know, they were giving money, they were giving arms to fight the Soviets on behalf of America, and this is where it all has kind of like took shape and it all have started. The Taliban is the same group of mujahideen that's been uncivilized for this for the many years, and they have been trained in Pakistan. And I have to say that when all of this happened, as Chomsky put it, you know, one of the worst dictator of Pakistan was the president. And these were some of the deals that were made with him and the United States going forward.
I read an article over the weekend, and the foreign affairs minister, the equivalent from Pakistan, was quoted, and he said that there's a lot of misinformation about Pakistan's involvement in the Taliban in the international press. That's what he said.
Today, if you walk on the streets of Kabul, you see Taliban who have the Pakistani accent. They speak Urdu. They are dressed up as Pakistani people and as the Taliban Pakistanis as well. And this is like a a true example. This is evidence in itself that these people have been trained in Pakistan for so many years and are now trying to invade Afghanistan.
What's the population of Afghanistan? Is it 48 million, is that?
It's 35 million.
35 million, sorry. Yeah, 30, yeah, I think it says 38 million in the thing. And the number of Taliban, have you any idea how many?
It's thousands.
Thousands.
The Afghan Taliban are thousands. But now we are talking, you know, about all of these groups merging together. And I have to say they are not united at all. So there is a down point to them for them as well. But it's a mix of Taliban from Afghanistan, but also from Pakistan mostly.
Okay. Have you got loved ones still in Afghanistan?
Yes, I have, you know, I have relatives, I have family, I have friends. My whole life is there, you know, like it's where I'm from. How can I not?
Yeah. But you, like you wrote in the Irish Times last week, you are here now speaking out against the Taliban. Do you fear for your safety?
I mean,
if you returned.
If I return, honestly, all of my hopes are shattered. My heart is broken, and I don't even know if I will ever be able to return back to Afghanistan. And of course, I'm scared. You know, like the Taliban in 2001 is very different than the Taliban now. Like there is like 80 billion worth of equipment that the US has left in Afghanistan for them. And they're more technology driven. Yes. They are on internet, on social media. So, of course, you know, part of me is frightened, but I do feel the responsibility to raise my voice and to tell the world that, you know, as a human, they are responsible and we are not asking for help. We are asking for solidarity. It's not an Afghan war. It's an American war and it's a foreign war and we are asking for solidarity.
Of course, the world is different as well, isn't it, 20 years on? And the access to information within Afghanistan is a lot different than it was 20 years ago. And of course, people like yourself have seen what it is to be free.
Yes.
And that's different. So it's going to be a lot more difficult, I think, for the Taliban to keep people oppressed.
Well, it will be difficult, but also easy, because now they're all over Afghanistan. They have, you know, the space of operation that they have not had for the last 20 years. One of the things that I'm very scared of is freedom of speech. Who are going to be reporting from Afghanistan? All the journalists are gone. The whole generation that have, you know, thrived for the last 20 years are gone. And women, how are they going to be able to make sure that their voice are heard? It's a very scary stage and phase for Afghanistan. There is a possibility that, you know, we will not be able to hear, you know, like the true voices.
But with social media and, you know, the availability of technology, surely the truth will get out.
Sure. So in Afghanistan, there is one small province that is called Panjshir that has not been taken by the Taliban, but it's a very small province. And for the past few days, they have been announcing on social media that they're forming groups to protest against Taliban, etc. But they cut off the internet yesterday from this province.
Right.
So this could be like, this is the simplest example I can give on what could await.
Right. Just on their behavior towards women, and what I find like crazy is that all of this is done in the name of a god, is it?
Yes, Taliban has a flag that is a white flag with the kalima on it, which says that there is no god but God Himself, or something around these lines, but. The problem is that they have their own interpretation, and it's an interpretation that is, you know, a bunch of men, you know, 12, 13 men or a bit more sit together and they interpret it based on their limited mind, you know, and they are very close-minded. It's a men-driven interpretation. And I have to say that Taliban is a terrorist group. It has been, you know, recognized by a terrorist group. So they want to justify whatever they believe in a very small conservative framework and bring that out and legitimize it and practice it. I am a Muslim, you know, but I don't wear a scarf. I, you know, like my word between my God is with myself, you know, and it has nothing to do with the way I live or because those things are my culture. It's my inheritance. So they're bringing religion and politicizing religion and using that as an advantage for themselves to do acts of terrorist, to do to claim, you know, authority and legitimacy and be in power.
Have you ever met somebody who's in the Taliban?
No. No, I mean, like, I have worked as a journalist. We have been trying to interview them in the past, which has been the closest I have been in contact with them. But back then, they were only in the outer skirts of Afghanistan, and we were trying to see, like, what's happening or how much they have invaded or you know, what they think about, you know, like, for instance, the so-called peace deals. But that's my...
I'm just trying to understand, are they the religious fundamentalists or just straightforward terrorists or criminals?
They're all of that.
All of that.
All of that. And
but somebody is selling these, you know, the guys lower down the ladder. They're selling them something. They're selling them a vision of something that they, if they do all these things, these horrible things, that they will go end up in some sort of heaven. Is that it?
Well, you know, they are definitely using religion as a tool to advocate for what they believe in, to recruit more people, and this has been, you know, one of the you know, like, their plus points to get into the minds of people. And they were able to do this within the space that was provided by them in Pakistan. And this goes to the Pakistani histories of, like, Islamization, yes. But this has been happening for such a long time.
What are you doing your PhD on in Trinity College?
I am doing my PhD with a project called Net Hate. It's a network of excellence training on hate. We are trying to find the underpinnings of hate, and I personally work on Persian-speaking migrants to see the relationship between propagating hate and charismatic leaders.
Right. So do you think you need, is the hypothesis that you need a charismatic leader to propagate hate?
Correct.
Yes, of course you do. And then if you have a charismatic leader who has some sort of religion as well, that makes it easier to propagate hate as well, because you're doing it in the name of a God.
Yeah, absolutely. And this applies to right-wing extremists. This applies to, like, a lot of other political groups that exist within the spectrum of Europe as well. So it's not, you know, it's not, you know, one specific problem related to a specific group.
No. So to understand it then is to find ways to counteract it, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the ways that I'm looking at it is that I'm referring to journalists. I'm referring back to the ground people on how they are countering terrorism. Hate speech, and how they do how they deal with it, and what they think is the most productive way, and how the conversations around hate speech can be developed in order to encourage a more inclusive society.
Soraya is a wonderful representation of what it should be like in Afghanistan. Stopped in my tracks to listen. That's from Rosie.
Thanks
so much, Soraya, for coming in. I think our listeners would have found that informative, because oftentimes when you hear Afghanistan discussed, there's an assumption of knowledge on behalf of the listener. So I think that was very informative. So thank you very much, and mind yourself, and good luck with your PhD.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Tweet at Radio Ray RTE, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, what an impressive woman. Now, from Afghanistan to jellyfish of sorts, the notoriously dangerous Portuguese man of war may be looking to holiday in Ireland. One of them was found washed up on the beach at Ardmore in County Waterford over the weekend. And that's not the first one to appear on our shores this year. I'm joined now by marine biologist and science communicator Áine Lisa Shannon. How are you doing,
Áine
Lisa? How are you? Now, I said jellyfish of sorts because, strictly speaking, and you're a marine biologist, man-o-wars are not jellyfish.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they do look like true jellyfish, but they're actually called siphonophores.
Right.
And they belong to a class called hydrozoans. Now, siphonophores are actually tiny organisms called zooids, and they all kind of look the same. And they're all genetically identical, but they all have an individual role to play. So let's just say the Portuguese man of war. So some of the tentacles will be designed to ensnare the prey.
Right.
Some of them will be designed to digest it. And then other ones will be designed to reproduce.
But what you're saying
so
to me
all
is
very
that
different.
They're all, a man of war is made up of many individual organisms.
Exactly, yeah.
Aha.
And it looks like one giant animal. And another comparison that you could put it against is coral. So if you saw a coral reef, it looks like one animal, but they're actually tiny individual organisms called zooids. So they're just made up of thousands of animals, but they actually can't live on their own. So they have to live and coincide together.
Right. So if you got a bite from a man of war, is it a number of these individual organisms biting you together, or is it just one little pecker?
So they're called, so the stinging cells are nematosis. So they can all sting you.
Yes.
But they'd release, it's like a harpoon is what they release. So basically, they're not looking to sting you, but once they go into contact with you, they'll just release the nematosis, and then they just give a really, really nasty sting.
Now, they usually don't hang out on our coastlines because it's too cold for them.
Yeah, so they're not actually native to Irish waters. They're normally found in tropical regions. So they're actually found near the Azores, and they're also found around the Caribbean. Normally, when they wash up around Irish waters, they kind of come in the end of the summer. That's when our waters are our warmest. And also when there's strong winds, they can actually bring them towards our coast as well. So like if you've washed up around the south and the east of Ireland, so we might see a few more now at the end of September, kind of mid-September too.
Yeah, and it's a nasty owl sting you get from them.
It is. I would definitely avoid the water if I saw any, and I wouldn't go near any of them, even if they're washed up on the beach, because they still can sting you even when they're washed up. So normally the lifeguards will go around Irish beaches and they'll check to see if there's any around. They'll
yeah.
normally close the beaches. I would just steer clear of them. I mean, they're an amazing species, but I would not, even myself now, I wouldn't be risking going into the water.
I'm delighted we had this chat today, because now people be going, yeah, I got stung by a man of war jellyfish, and they'll be hopping around there in pain. I go, excuse me. Sorry, don't mean to be pedantic now. I know you're in pain, but it's not a jellyfish.
It's actually a siphonophore.
A siphonophore.
So there you go right now. You can tell them that.
And what you're dealing with there is loads of different organisms all in one. Make it look
exactly.
like one.
So, exactly.
Final question. I don't expect you to have an answer. I'm intrigued by the origins of words and phrases and all that. So where did it get its name from? Any idea, man of wars?
So the Portuguese man of war, I think it was based off a large sailing ship. Back in the 18th century.
Right.
Yeah, off the coast of Portugal. That's what I found anyway, and
right.
I'm going to go with that.
Yes, yeah. That's your story and you're sticking to it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Alicia Shannon, great talking to you. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, because they were saying great things about you when you were on while I was away. Thank you very much. Thanks, Anya, Lisa. Thank you. There's a phone call down from upstairs to say it's Tyrone and not Tyrone. I know they sound the same, but it's Tyrone, not Tyrone. And I knew that because back in the day when we were recording Blackboard Jungle, there was a great floor manager who used to work in RTE called Ronnie Patterson. And Ronnie was a member of the Patterson family, who were a folk group during the 60s and the 70s. Lovely man, Ronnie. We must have had a school on from, as I was calling it, Tyrone. And he just took me aside and he said, by the way, Ray, us people from Tyrone don't like it being called Tyrone. So if I got it wrong earlier in the show, I do apologise. I do apologise. It's Tyrone all the way. And today, our quiz of today. Yes. So today, the 30th of August, 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. We have two contestants lined up and we've won prize. And it's a two-night stay in the Fairways Hotel Dundalk, which is a four-star destination. One evening meal in the Bistro restaurant. You can go on the Loch of Legends ferry across the Carlingford Loch. You can visit Ravensdale Equestrian Centre and lots more to do. Do you know what I have to get for me there? I have to get an email or a website for them. I don't have that on that. That's what I was looking for there. Okay. Hello to Kate Kelly. Hello, Kate.
Hi there.
You're in Dunmore East in Waterford.
I am, yeah.
How are things down there today?
It's fairly dull out. It's not very sunny today, so...
Right. And what's your story? What are you up to?
Myself and my brother are doing up my mom's kitchen.
Right, nice. So, yeah. Painting it or cleaning it or?
We're painting it now, but my brother was putting down some tiles and putting in some new presses and stuff.
Lovely. What colour are you painting it?
Like a sage green colour.
Right, nice. And did you pick it out? Did your mum pick it out?
We picked out everything. It was meant to be a surprise, but she came home and seen us doing it yesterday, so she knows now.
Right, okay. So you sent her away for the weekend, did you? And yourself and Keane got in and thought you'd have it finished by the time she came back. Was that it?
That's it. We were a bit slow, but...
Right, okay. And what do you do when you're not doing up your mum's kitchen?
I'm an SNA in a primary school.
Right. Whereabouts?
In Waterford City.
And when are you not back today, no?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, all right. Right, so this is your last day of the summer.
It is, yeah.
Right. Okay, you're up against Joe McCracken. And Joe is from Tyrone. Hey, living in Dublin. How you doing, Joe?
Hiya, Ray. How are you doing? It's actually Tyrone. Tyrone.
Tyrone. So you don't even...
We love to make it difficult for you, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, you do, yes. So it's definitely not Tyrone, and it's not Tyrone either. It's Tyrone.
Yeah, we like to drop the Y and just get the good harsh Tyrone.
So T-R-O-N-E, Tyrone.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
And what brought a Tyrone man down to Dublin?
Work via London, via Scotland. So living in Dublin now since 2016. And then, of course, met my future wife here too. So we've just had our first child there back after Christmas. So probably permanently here for the foreseeable anyway.
Oh, congratulations. Did you get to go to the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I was at the game, so delighted with the result. I was actually hoping you might have somebody on from Mayo that I could play today. Almost as a little curtain raiser.
Oh, yeah. It's all open now, isn't it? Because, like, they were saying back at the beginning, the pundits, the people who know, that the only team that might beat Dublin were Kerry. And now neither Dublin nor Kerry exist in the final. It's Mayo versus Tyrone. Very exciting. What's the talk on the streets of Tyrone?
Well, I think obviously a lot of people underrated us going into the semi-final and thought Kerry would get the walkover. But, you know, it'll be two evenly matched teams, I think, Tyrone and Mayo. If anything, it'll be novel. They'll either go to Connacht or Ulster this year and not stay in Leinster or go in Munster. So may the best team win.
Okay. Right. So Kate plays Joe. Five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw at the end of that, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay, Kate, first question for you. On this day in 1961, the last Spanish troops left Morocco. On which continent would you find Morocco?
North Africa, I think.
Yeah, I'll take Africa, yeah. North Africa will do. And for you, Joe, on this day in 1986, Bolivian President Victor Paz said the country was in a state of siege. On what continent would you find Bolivia?
South America.
That's the correct answer. Second question for you, Kate. It's an audio one. Have a listen to this.
There's something I have to tell you.
You don't have to tell me anything, Princess. I heard enough last night.
You heard what I said?
Every word.
I thought you'd understand.
Oh, I understand. Like you said, who could love a hideous, ugly beast?
On this day in 1972, Cameron Diaz, American actress, was born in California. She played Princess Fiona alongside Mike Myers in that animated franchise. Can you name it?
I think it's Shrek.
It is Shrek. You're right. Well done, Kate. And for you, Joe, have a listen to this. On this day in 2008, actor James Gandolfini married Deborah Lynn in Hawaii. He played the lead role in that gangster family drama. You heard the theme tune. Can you name it?
The Sopranos, right?
It is the Sopranos, the brilliant Sopranos. Okay, all. Question number three for you, Kate. On this day in 1969, 120,000 people attended the Texas International Pop Festival in the U.S. state of Texas. The question is, in total, how many U.S. states begin with the letter T? Two or three?
T, Texas. Oh, I don't know. Two or three? I'll just say two.
Well, you said right. Texas and Tennessee. Well done. And that brings you up to three.
by answering two. Okay, Joe, your question. On this day in 1910, President Theodore Roosevelt made a speech in the US state of Kansas advocating a square deal for all. In total, how many US states begin with the letter K, two or three?
It is two.
It is two.
Kansas, Kentucky.
It is Kansas. Well, you don't get any extra points for naming them, but you are correct. Okay, it's three all. We're on to four. It's a music question for you, Kate. Have a listen. Now, on this day in 1994, that British band released their debut album, Definitely Maybe. Can you name them?
Isn't the song Love Forever?
Yeah, the song is Live Forever. I'm looking for the band's name.
Oasis?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, okay. There you go. Again, you don't get any extra for naming the song. For you, Joe, have a listen to this. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for months. I'll do what you want me to do. On this day in 1986, that American singer was unveiled at Hollywood's Walk of Fame. Can you name her?
Tina Turner.
That's correct.
Well,
you were just, was that a guess?
It was a bit of a guess. I was scratching my head there. I was hoping for the Oasis one.
Right, but there you go. It's Tina Turner's a bit before your time, I suppose. Okay, so it's four all, lads. So, Kate, get this right. You put Joe under a bit of pressure, get it wrong, and Joe has the opportunity to win. Good luck with this, it's an important one. On this day in 1945, during World War II, US General Douglas MacArthur landed in Japan. Now the question is this: which of these countries has a larger population than Japan? Turkey, Russia or Vietnam?
Turkey, Russia, Vietnam.
Bigger population than Japan. Come on, Keane.
I'll just go Russia.
You go Russia. It sounds bigger, doesn't it? Yeah, Turkey is 84 million, Vietnam 97 million, Japan 126 million, and you're right, Russia 145 million, giving you 5 out of 5. Putting the pressure on Joe. Come on, Tron. Right, Joe, good luck with this. Get it right, and we go to a tiebreak. Get it wrong, and Kate is today's winner. This day in 1993 saw the... 150 million visitor to the Eiffel Tower in Paris in France. Which of these countries has a larger population than France? South Africa, Spain, or the Democratic Republic of Congo? Larger population than France. South Africa, Spain.
Democratic Republic of Congo.
Would you? Just because it has a longer name, is it? Spain is 46 million. South Africa is 59 million. France is 65 million. And you're right, Congo, 89 million. No. So you're good today, both of you. That's 5-5, which brings us to a tiebreak situation. We asked you the question before you went on air to prevent any messing around. So if you could remember your guesses, it'd be great. I'll read out the question for our listeners at home. On this day in 1948, Donegal D, Irish professional poker player, was born in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to walk from the GPO in Dublin to Newbridge in County Kildare? And I want the answer in hours and minutes. Your guess, Kate?
9 hours and 20 minutes.
9 hours and 20 minutes. Now it's 45 kilometres. And you said, Joe?
6 hours and 20 minutes.
6 hours and 20 minutes. It's a bit longer than a marathon. The correct answer is 9 hours and 12 minutes. So Kate is today's winner. Sorry about that, Joe.
No problem. Congratulations, Kate.
You can't win everything.
Thank you.
You can't win everything.
Absolutely.
You won the semi-final.
We haven't won nothing yet either.
Well, I tell you what. You may not, Sam, you may not win the cup, but you've won a mug. So we're sending out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Delighted.
Okay. Well, actually, we'll send you out two, Joe. Because you're
fantastic.
So good. Okay.
Thank you.
Lovely talking to you. See you, Joe. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Ray. Bye.
Bye. Kate Kelly, well done.
Thank you so much.
So yourself and a person of your choice are going to the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, and loads of things to do up there. Enjoy it and well done.
Lovely. Thank you so much.
Good luck with the kitchen. See you. Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Apropos nothing, as they say, John Intala was on to say... you've got to try Boxty. Oh, this is for Carrie.
It is, so it is apropos something. I thought they were telling me to try some box tea. So Carrie, who is stuck in quarantine, who's returning to the United States to her new husband on Wednesday, has to try box tea. Had some Bell Mullet this weekend and it was delicious. Where would she get box tea? There used to be Gallagher's Box Tea House in Temple Bar, but that's closed. Well, if we can find box tea, we'll get it to her, John. Thanks for that suggestion. Now, I mentioned Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds because Mick Cave and the Good Seeds came up in conversation. And I mentioned this song, so here it is. Some of it, anyway. Sing along there, Connor Pope.
Ray, not for national radio.
That's a beautiful song, isn't it?
It is. It is written for Polly Harvey. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, PJ Harvey.
All right.
Yeah, he was madly smitten by her at the time.
Sheilin' a Gig.
That's the song.
Yeah. Into My Arms, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds from The Boatman's Call. And that was released for your bonus point, Connor Pope.
I'm going to say 1995.
1997. So no bonus point. How are you?
I'm great.
Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want Connor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. So we'll get straight to this, and then if we have anything else to talk about after, we will do that, but this is the most important thing. Dear Connor, recently I discovered that my 86-year-old mother has been overcharged by AIR for a year. The package she signed up for was $66.98, which included calls and broadband, but for the past year they have charged an extra $24.35 for home broadband charges. She spent weeks trying to get through to AIR, holding for over an hour. I've just recently taken this over for my mother, as you can just imagine the stress that this is causing her. When I got to speak to someone, they confirmed my mother had been overcharged for 6 months, but they said they could only refund the last month. However, since then, I've discovered that they have overcharged her since June 2019. I paid my mother's overdue bill online, but I decided that I would only pay her package of $66.98, as I mentioned. A few days later, we get a text to say that due to an overdue balance on your AIR account, your service will be suspended unless you take immediate action. Needless to say, this caused me concern, as my mother's phone line is her contact to her family and the outside world.
Yeah, there's a couple of things here that would kind of make your blood boil. For a start, this is an 86-year-old woman who needs support, who needs help, and she's not getting it from the company. That's the first thing. Second thing is the element of overcharging, and then the fact that the company said, "Yeah, we accepted that we overcharged you, but we're only going to give you a month back."
Why can they say that?
They can't say that. Just nonsense. If you've been overcharged for a period of time, well, then you're entitled to a refund. So that's the bottom line. And then, of course, the other difficulty is again something that we've discussed on the show on many different occasions, which is the difficulty people have in making contact with AIR. Now, it's AIR in this instance, but I mean, it's something that comes up again and again and again when you're dealing with these big companies, the difficulties people have in actually making contact with somebody who can make a difference.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, all of those things combined, as soon as our listener made the first call to AIR saying, "Listen, I'm intervening on behalf of my mother. She needs some support. She needs some help." Somebody at that point should have had the cop on to say, "Okay, well, this is a vulnerable customer that we're dealing with. Let's do whatever it takes to resolve this problem before it gets to the next stage." And of course, that didn't happen. And then what happened instead is she was sent a message saying that, you know, you haven't paid your full bill. We're going to, you know, we're now threatening you with disconnection. And what actually the outstanding amount that she owed was something laughable, like less than a fiver. Now, I know that there's probably an automated process that kicks in. And as soon as a bill isn't cleared in full, well, then the letter gets sent out as part of kind of a robotic system that is in place across many different utilities. But I mean, the question that we've asked so many times on the show, Ray, is where's the humanity in all this?
Yeah.
Why didn't someone say, "Listen, lads, we're dealing with an 86-year-old woman. We're living through a time of COVID. This person needs to have access to her phone. And apart from anything else, we've overcharged her. So let's address the problem." This listener contacted us, and obviously we did what we always do. We contacted the company, and again, within 72 hours, the problem was resolved to the customer's satisfaction. So the problem has now gone away. But the systemic problem that exists across, and I would argue across almost every single large, big company like this, it still exists. This shouldn't have got to this point. The person had, and as soon as they realised that they were overcharging her, they should have said, "Well, then we will have to give you all of the money that we've overcharged you back. End of story." This whole idea of haggling over, "Oh, we'll give you a month back," and hoping that a customer will go away, that's just totally unacceptable.
Can I ask you, it's a question I've never asked you, but when you get these in, what happens next? Do you have a direct line to AIR that the rest of us don't have?
It's a good question. I mean, a lot of companies, in fact, almost every big company will have either an internal PR department, or they'll have external people who work on their behalf. So, I mean, you know, a lot of your listeners will be familiar with lots of big PR agencies, and they look after, you know, various different clients. And then a lot of big companies, like Air, for instance, would have their own dedicated internal communications department. And then they have, you know, so they're the people I would contact. And like, to be fair to all of those people, they're all incredibly professional. I'm sure the last, I can almost hear people's hearts sink when they receive a mail from me, because it's never me going, lads, I've got some great news here. Just got a call from a listener and they think you're brilliant. It's always bad news. And I do feel that weight on my shoulders sometimes, because, you know, the individuals I'm dealing with, it's not their fault, you know. But there is a systemic problem that exists across multiple companies. So, like, when I say it's not their fault, it's not like the person who works in the PR department or the person who works in the communications department, they haven't screwed up this. They didn't mess up the call. Similarly, you know, an awful lot of the people who are working within the companies haven't messed it up. But there needs to be proper systems in place.
But Connor, look, how long are we talking?
Oh, God, I don't even want, like, it's probably almost as long as Nick Cave has been singing.
It's 10 years probably now that we've been chatting, and over that time there's been a constant problem with customer service in this country, and I don't know if it happens in other countries as well. And surely they must listen. They must know that they have a problem. And why don't they rectify it? Why don't they put it to right?
Well, there's a couple of things at play here. In fact, and would you believe it, it's probably been more than 15 years.
Oh, is it right?
But there's a couple of things at play, and it happens everywhere. Ireland is not unique in this regard. One of the reasons is there's been this giant push towards automated systems and artificial intelligence and web chat and all of these things. And companies everywhere have moved towards relying more on, as I say, automated systems. That's one problem. Another problem is that companies, big companies, small companies, in this country and elsewhere, they recognise how the consumer dynamic works, and they recognise that they have to do something really egregious before people will up sticks and leave. So they have a calculated metric that says, okay, well, we will spend more of our money on attracting new business, and then we'll spend less of our money on attracting, on keeping our existing business happy.
How do you know this?
Well, I mean, like, one of the examples I can give you is that, that the chief executive of Air, Caroline Lennon, was speaking before an Oireachtas committee last year. Yes. I think we probably talked about it on air. And she spoke about how, you know, comparatively little the people who are working on the front lines of the customer care departments are earning. Like, they're earning, you know, maybe €24,000 a year or something like that. Now, €24,000 a year for a job that is at the front line of representing a company isn't really very good. So you could kind of say, well, listen, why don't you pay them double? Why don't you pay them €48,000 a year? And why don't you incentivize them to be really, really good at their jobs? Now, I'm not saying the individuals working in the call centres are, you know, each of them are terrible at their jobs, because that's clearly not the case. But, and I'm not also, it's not singling out Air. I think all companies should invest more in the frontline customer care staff that they have, empower them to do their jobs properly, reward them when they do their jobs properly, pay them better, and that way all of the problems that we deal with that aren't actually that difficult to resolve would be resolved.
I wonder, are they holding out for the perfect AI solution? Is that what all these big companies are holding out for? That because they're reading and they're being told at conference after conference that AI is progressing, you know, in leaps and bounds exponentially, and the things it can do, you know, is they're getting greater and greater. So maybe they're holding out for a day when AI will solve all their customer service problems.
But like, that day could be like,
but it's
like,
not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No, because what people want is they want human intervention.
Yes, that's
and
it.
The fundamental thing that I think people want when they're dealing with a company, any company, is they want to know that they're dealing with somebody at the other end of the line who cares about their problem and cares sufficiently about their problem to fix it. And every time you ring a mobile phone operator or a utility or whatever it might be, if you're left on hold for 45 minutes and then you get on to somebody who doesn't really give a rashers about your problem and then can't fix the problem, so then you have to go through the process again and again.
We've all been there.
And the terrible thing is that too often that when you ring these companies, you might be on hold for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever it might be. But as soon as you tell them the problem, then they say, oh, grand, no, that's fine, Mr. Darcy, I'll sort that out. And nothing happens. So you ring again, and it's like you're starting from scratch.
They have zero idea what you're talking about. I won't get into what's happened to me with a certain company, but it's gone to WhatsApp now, and they have a virtual assistant. And
that's pricewatch@rte.ie, Ray, if you just want to mail me.
Right. Thanks for coming into a booth today.
No problem, Ray.
I'll see you soon.
Mind yourself, take care.
Right. That's Connor, and he's right. Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want the great Connor Pope. We've been talking for more than 15 years. I feel a bit embarrassed that I didn't know when we met. It's like a relationship. Pricewatch at rte.ie. Now, apologies to the Boxty House. We heard it was reported that the Boxty House in Temple Bar is closed, but we are very much open for business. Still run by Padraig O'Gallagher, the Boxty House is over 30 years young. Can you let your listeners know? There it is. The Gallagher's Boxty House is still open in Temple Bar. You just made my day. I'm here ironing in the kitchen, crying. Not sad. I love that song. Myself and my husband Michael adore it. Thank you for playing it, says Anna. And love that Nick Cave song. It's the first time since my mum died 3 years ago that I've not cried listening to it. Well, there's a good day, Maeve. Time. That's it from us. Our time is up. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. Yes, it is Monday. Yes.
Good luck. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.